This is, are we early? No. We're not early. Other people are late. And so we're going to go ahead and start because we have a very full agenda. And really, this is probably our very last hearing before we start really doing the omnibus bill. This is... Okay. So we have... We do not have a quorum yet, so I think, Representative Emmer, are you in the room? I think we'll start with your bill. We have some bills that are on their way to us or are on the floor, which we could possibly use. We had heard, you've heard the truancy bill several times in the past. This is the latest version. I thought you should be updated on what the latest version looks like. It's very cleaned up and simplified, I guess, is the way I would put it. So then we have also three other bills that have been referred to us but haven't actually arrived in body at this point in time. The paper, the green jacket hasn't arrived, but we know we're getting it and it's been referred to us. So we're going to listen to those today also. All right, Representative Emmer.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, this is House File 1717, and I don't want to take up much of your time because I assume most everyone in the room is quite familiar with this issue. It's been around for many years. I have Katie Engler from the Department of Administration with me. Very briefly, I was asked to carry this bill, found out that it had a lot of history and it had some problems. I wondered why it hadn't passed through long ago. Ms. Engler was kind enough to work with me and some other folks that are involved in order to solve some problems with the bill, and she'll explain those to you.
Is it Ms. Engler?
Yes.
Ms. Engler, welcome to the committee, and if you would just kind of tell us how this new process in this bill would work.
Madam Chair, members, for the record, my name is Katie Engler. I'm with the Department of Administration. And House File 1717, as it sits before you today, I believe works in conjunction with the federal law on student records, which is called the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act, which is known by the acronym FERPA. And what FERPA basically says is that parents control who has access to their student records. And there are some exceptions to that requirement that parents give consent to access to their children's school records, one of which is accessed by what's called the juvenile justice system. And the bill before you today basically allows schools to share daily attendance information, which you can find on page 3 in line 4, to the juvenile justice system so that when a child is in the juvenile justice system, specifically in front of a juvenile court, about being truant from school, that the juvenile justice system is required to cancel their driving privileges. And that is found on page 19 in the new language on lines 11 through 13. And before, this bill required the Department of Public Safety to be much more active in this process than it is in this version. School attendance is still, according to the bill, required for a student ages 16 or 17 to receive driving privileges, but it gives the power to the juvenile court to take the driving privileges away, thus making the release of data about the child from the school about their truancy to the juvenile court fit within the federal law requirements. Okay. And with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Madam Chair, if I might add briefly,
Representative Emmer.
Just so for point of reference for all of you that understood the way the bill existed previously, it had all kinds of requirements in it for the school. First, it's an opt-in program. That hasn't changed. But what has changed is under the original version of the bill, the school was under an obligation to create a notice provision, to have hearings, and then to determine whether or not it was a circumstance that required communicating the data to the Department of Public Safety. A huge burden for our schools that already have enough to worry about. So what we did with this version of the bill is we removed all of that. It's a very simple process that takes advantage of the way the law currently exists, which are truancy issues, as they exist, are already within the jurisdiction of the juvenile justice system. All this bill does for us is say that if you have a, first, if you opt in, and you're part of the program, that you give everyone notice that's attending your school, parents in particular, that if you have a truant as defined by the law or by the school, the local authority, that information can be transmitted to the juvenile justice system. At that point, what we would hope for is that the system works the way it's designed. The young man or the young woman would have a hearing with a judge, and special circumstances could be addressed. But if those special circumstances do not exist in the eyes of the judge, the law would require that they lose their driving privileges. That's what's been changed.
It sounds like a much simpler, more direct system than we had before. Representative Grodin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Emmer, I'll ask the question that I asked before, and you didn't know the answer, but maybe you've had a chance to think about it since I asked it last time. I'm wondering how many students you estimate might be helped by this. As you cited, the ones that are in real trouble are in the juvenile court system, and this is already a tool. Then there are the parents, you know, like hopefully many of us here who jerked our own kids around with their driver's license. And so I think you're looking at the ones where that didn't make it into the juvenile court, but whose parents aren't able to do this themselves, and then you want the schools to be able to do that. But yet it's a very short window when the kids are eligible to drive or they don't already have their driver's license. So have you come up with any estimate on that question?
Representative Greiling, I must admit, I should have checked to see who was going to be here this morning so I could have recalled the questions I was asked before. And I think when you asked me in the Education Policy Committee that very question, my answer to you was no, I don't have the numbers for you. I don't have numbers for you today either, but what I do have, and I didn't bring it with me, and I'd like to talk to you after, is I have accumulated some research that shows there is a direct correlation between the right to drive from other states and attendance in school. So it doesn't answer your question directly, but I can give you some information that shows that there is a correlation that's been at least established scientifically. The other thing I want to emphasize for you and everyone else is, no, this is not what the law already provides. Under the juvenile justice system, the judge, as I understand it, can suspend driving privileges. This requires a suspension of driving privileges, but it will give the option, or at least some discretion, to the court under special circumstances.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Sikora, and thank you, Representative Emmer, for making this more simple and for taking the burden off our school districts from the extent that the previous bill extended responsibilities to them. But I think we're also lining up with a lot of other states on this issue, and it's good to know that there's someone who has preceded us who has found this to be an effective program, and so we hope this this will remind our young people that driving is privilege and that they need to be in school during those years when schooling is essential to them.
Madam Chair, Representative, thank you very much, but I cannot take the credit. Katie Engler is the one that fixed this, and she did a great job.
Ms. Engler, thank you very much for all your hard work. Representative Heidgerken.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Emmer for bringing this forth. We had visited about this issue in your office. And when it was first initiated, I think Representative Sikora, remember that I did fight the bill when it first came out, because I worry about when we legislate, sometimes we forget about who we are legislating, and sometimes it spins out, Representative Grattling, in a metro area than it differently in the country area. We have buses, and we have metro transit in the metro area, and taxi cabs, etc. But when you get out to Polk County, there are no taxis or no buses or anything. And these kids are basically truant, kicked out of school and lose their license. There is no access to move or even to get to school, both parents working or whatnot all. But the hardship waiver, I like that, Representative Ingram. I compliment you on giving me a heads up of where you're going. And I looked over the bill, and it's far better. And I still like the opt-in and opt-out of certain school districts on it. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Emmer, thank you so much for updating us. And Ms. Engler, this is such an improvement over, I think, what we had been looking at.
Mm-hmm.
I thank you also, Representative Emmer. I'm sure this has had quite a process.
Always fun. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And we will move on to House File 2275. Happens to be my bill. Representative Emmer? Demmer.
I'm good. Demmer and Emmer.
Sorry about that.
That's not like Dunn and Duffer.
I think we'll be dealing with that for a while.
I know. You'll get
it. I think, Mr. Chairman, I would like to move House File 2275 before the committee and to be considered for inclusion in the omnibus bill. And here I am sitting with my two best buddies who have become best buddies on this particular bill. This is an issue.
Where's the camera when we need it?
I never have a camera when I need it.
These are a couple of issues that have been kind of thorns in the side of both MSBA and Edmin for a while. And by some miracle, these two ladies, accomplishing what the gentleman just can't seem to accomplish. That was an editorial.
We'll take that as a rhetorical comment, Representative Sikora.
Have managed to come together and kind of come up with a way to solve two issues that have been bothering them. So they will briefly talk about these, and I hope you will accept this solution because it's something that we have, that has kind of been debated back and forth for a while. And maybe we can fix two little issues in one fell swoop.
Representative Sikora, do you need to move your bill?
I did.
Oh, I'm sorry. Welcome, Ms. Schwab.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It is a pleasure to be here and a pleasure to serve as Education Minnesota. We thank Representative Sikora for helping us bring this solution to life.
Ms. Schwab, be sure to introduce yourself.
Okay. Thank you. Grace Schwab is the Governmental Relations Director for the Minnesota School Boards Association. Our portion of this bill has to do with probationary employment, probationary periods for teachers. Presently, the Teacher Tenure Act does not define what constitutes a year of employment for probationary teachers for the purposes of determining tenure. A court case determined that a teacher who is deemed to have worked a full year for the purposes of defining a probationary year of employment could be as little as 79 hours. A 1972 Attorney General's opinion said that the annual contract satisfies 1 year of the probationary period, regardless of the length of actual teacher services rendered during such a period. This number is then corrected by this bill. 60 days becomes the minimum amount of time, not necessarily the length of the contract. So we're very happy to have this change. We think it will continue to ensure our teachers are the best and the brightest in the nation. Ms. Allswager.
Mr. Chairman, the Committee, Jan Allswager, Education Minnesota.
Welcome.
Thank you. All teachers, and our portion of the bill is from on page 3, line 31, starting with subdivision, line 29, section 3. And what this does is some language on page 5 that clarifies that early childhood family education teachers are in the bargaining unit. But first, let me say this. All teachers who are licensed are in the bargaining unit, including early childhood family education teachers. This issue is really only for teachers who teach fewer than 14 hours per week or 35% of a work week. So this just clarifies that they should be in the bargaining unit. It doesn't give them any extra rights. It only puts them into the bargaining unit. And there are some reasons why this decision came out from the Bureau of Mediation Services, and if you want, I'll get into that. But we've talked to the superintendents, we've talked to other educational organizations, and we're all right here together.
Thank you.
Are there any?
Any questions from members for any of the testifiers or Representative Sikora? Representative Heidgerken.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The question I have, and I don't see it in here, and I don't know if it's already in, what happens in the situation of long-term subs?
You mean long-term subs who aren't teachers, considered
teachers,
right. Mm-hmm. That aren't licensed?
Right, they're licensed. Say, for example, I'm down here now, and I've got elected to the legislature, and somebody's going to be filling in for the months of January, February, March, April, and perhaps May. Are they're probationary? Do they receive tenure? Do they qualify for tenure?
Mr. Chair, Representative Heifergen, actually, if it is a teacher filling a position for you, they would not get tenure. They would receive what is called continuing contract rights. Now, if the teacher worked more than 60 days for 3 years, it would be our position that when they receive, as of July 1st, if they have not been terminated, that they would then have a continuing contract for that period of time.
So in other words,
Representative Heifergen.
In other words, now if I'm just say for example, I've been trying to get into a school system and it's hard to find, and in rural Minnesota, it's sometimes very hard to find a teaching position, and a lot of them take the long term sub role to get involved in the school system and get get noticed and hopefully get hired. If, say, for example, I'd be one of these long-term subs and I fill in for a maternity leave, among other things, and long-term, I get so many days in each year, would I eventually qualify for, if I do this a number of years in a row, become tenured?
Mr. Chair, Representative Heifergen, one of my colleagues who has a number of solutions, this being one of them, and he does have another one in his back pocket, too, it gave me the correct answer to the question, and that is that a long-term substitute must work an entire year to qualify for a year of probation. So I was incorrect when I spoke before on that.
Ms. Walsh-Parker, would that be in the nature of the terms of the contract when they're hired to show that they're hired for the year and then they have to work 60 days of that year? Is that the distinction? I think when you sign a contract, don't you sign either a long-term subcontract versus a one-year contract? And I think probably what this is referring to in the bill then is the one-year contract having to work 60 days of that contract. Am I right on that? Ms. Schwab? Or Ms. Altwager, either one?
Mr. Chair, I think we're getting your question a little mixed. Your question a little bit mixed up. A one-year contract is a long-term subcontract. If you're talking about a contract that has the possibility of continuing, those contracts, you could fulfill the probationary period if you work 60 days. If you were filling you use the word one-year contract, I would call that a long-term subcontract. That contract, if you had a long-term subcontract, and you worked, let's say, 70 days, you would not be fulfilling the requirements of probation because you have to work in...
Ms. Watt.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're getting all kinds of help from the audience. It's a good day. Mr. Gaines wanted me to share with you also that the long-term substitute statute is a different statute from this, entirely different, and different rules govern it. So it's a sort of a different part of the law than what we're dealing with.
So a different statute, different area, and a different contract.
Yes, correct.
Got it. Any other questions? Representative Quincy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know that when I've been on the negotiations team before that we have included ECFE teacher pay and salary. So is the change in this bill just letting them be part of the team? Because since they're already being bargained, it seems like they're already kind of, their salaries are part of the bargaining process. I guess what specifically is changing that about this particular, in this legislation?
Ms. Osweiler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Quincy, those early childhood teachers are already in the bargaining unit, but all this does is includes those teachers who are working fewer than 14 hours in a work week in the bargaining unit. They still, right now, are getting the benefits in terms of the negotiations and things like that, however they worked out. It's just that it identifies them as and places them in the bargaining unit.
Any other questions?
Can we add a little bit to that here?
Cora. Ms. Watt.
Mr. Chairman, they're allowed to be part of the bargaining unit, but that doesn't necessarily mean they receive the same benefits as the other K-12 teachers. So it doesn't give you more rights, per se, under this than you would normally have as a present district employee. And I just want to add on that some districts have already done this, already included these folks. I know in Albert Lee we did it about 15 years ago. So it's sort of all over the mark where people are, and this would at least provide some uniformity.
Thank you. Any other questions, members? Representative Sikora, any further comments?
No, I think it's nice when two people who are normally on kind of opposite sides, when you can get two organizations who kind of tend to lobby against each other most of the time, when you can get them to, you know, really sit down and work out their differences, I guess I applaud that. And I think especially in the area of defining, you know, what a probationary year would be. I think that's pretty important because I can imagine it's been all over the board. So I think this is a really good bill.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Sikora, Ms. Schwab, Ms. Halschwager. Having said that, we'll lay over this bill for further consideration in the omnibus bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's move on, members, to House File 1719, Representative Quinzing.
You wish to move your bill, Representative?
Yes, I'd like to move House File 1719 for the committee for consideration and possible consideration in the Education Finance Omnibus Bill. And I'd first like to move the amendment to get it in the form it should be in.
You have more than one.
Right, I have one short oral and then two amendments in A-10 and in A-5. First, I'll move the short oral amendment on the back side on page 10, last line, 36. This was not meant to be a one-time appropriation, so I'd just like to strike line 36.
All right. If I understand the amendment correctly, if you look on page 10 of your bill, line 36, strike, this is a one-time appropriation. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Amendment is adopted. Your other amendment, Representative.
Next, I'll move the A5 amendment. You do have to do an amendment to the amendment because some of the language from here actually ended up in another bill, so... the appropriation language starting in the A5 amendment, page 1, lines 5 through 24. We need to strike lines 5 to 24 on the A5 amendment. Is Ms. Larson correcting me?
I'm sorry, Ms. Larson. What did you say?
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, Representative Quinzing. It's lines 5 to 21 because you're proposing to delete section 5. So we would have to renumber subsequent sections, et cetera.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. So it should be strike lines 5 to 21.
Do we need this amendment?
Delete line 4.
Line 4.
Right. Okay.
Oh, sorry.
Are there any questions about this amendment?
The language is in another bill, so for this appropriation.
All right. So this starts with line 4, correct? Not line 5.
Yeah.
Line 4. Okay. So lines 4 through 21 are deleted in this, and so we're left with page 4, delete section 5. All right. So, does everybody understand the amendment? All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Representative Quinzing?
Okay, now that we've done the amendment to the A5 amendment, I just want to make clear that the A5 amendment, as amended, strikes the teacher stipend language out of the bill.
All right. Would you like to go ahead then and explain your language and your bill? Oh, you have one more amendment, don't you? Let's do your amendment.
Do we need to vote on the A5 amendment?
We did.
Amended? We voted on the amendment.
Oh, excuse me. You're right. We voted on the amendment to the amendment. All right. Now we're voting on the amendment. Representative.
On the A5 amendment, with the leading section 5, page 4, this is kind of housekeeping. Go to the top of page 5, lines 1 and 2. Are we also deleting that? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. It deletes the whole section.
All right, are there any further questions about this amendment? All right, hearing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Amendment is adopted. Representative Clemson. You have one more
amendment. One more amendment. It's the A-10 amendment.
Mm-hmm.
What this amendment does is directs the commissioner in the Department of Education to put into rule some criteria and an assessment process to enable school districts to accommodate students who try to meet the requirements but time after time after time can't. And at what point then do we, and how and what criteria can be used to help those students into the future. And some of those students might include students with disabilities, some English language learners, and also some students who just repeatedly perform below grade level. And so that there's a consistent policy across the state, this directs the commission and the Department of Education to put this into rule using some of the stakeholder groups they've been using for the design of this system, the graduation requirements system, that is.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Sikora. Representative Clemson, you're intending this to be transitional? Is this just for a certain period of time?
Madam Chair.
Representative Clemson.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, I think that that's a very good point and a very good question, but actually leave that up to the stakeholders group and the public process to kind of determine. And I believe this language would allow that to happen. And I think this did come up because there is some concern about the transition time with some of the students who may not have had these tests and standards since third grade. And they will be expected to take them in 11th grade, and they've only had them since 8th grade. So there will be some transition time for the state as we ratchet things up starting early on.
Thank you. All right. I see no further questions.
Oh,
yes. Representative Garland.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Clemson, I know that we had some discussion in this committee about the college credit, and there was concern from the higher ed people about the score of 3 and that they had other criteria themselves. It doesn't look like anything has changed, though. Did any reconciliation come about in this area like Representative Sikora had in her bill?
Madam Chair, would you like to vote on the amendment and then have me respond to part of the...
I thought the question was going to be on the amendment.
Okay.
All right. We are now voting on the A-10 amendment, unless there are further questions on that amendment. Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment passes. And Representative Greiling, did you wish to continue your line of questioning?
Please, Madam Chair. Representative Clemson, do you want me to repeat it, or did you catch it?
No, I remember it.
Okay.
I can respond. Madam Chair, Representative Greiling, the change that was made in the college credit, there was an issue that we had 3 or higher for international baccalaureate scores. And on page 5, you'll see that it says on line 9, 3 or higher on an advanced placement, and then on line 10, 4 or higher on the international baccalaureate program. So that was changed in the higher ed committee. committee.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you. Are there any further questions? Representative Distance.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Quinzing, on the QEPA test, I see on page 6, line 4, the words "who receive a satisfactory score." Does that mean that it will be determined by each college or university as to what that score will be, and there might be different standards in different schools of higher learning?
Madam Chair, I'll
Representative Clancy.
Have to bring up the department to respond to that.
All right. I think I recognize you. Commissioner Nelson.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Marianne Nelson. I'm an assistant commissioner at the Department of Ed. In response to the question raised by Representative Viskins, the intention is that the commissioner will work with the MNCU system to set a passing score for college credit. We have been in communication with the College Board, and they now recommend a standards panel process involving faculty, and the intention is that there will be one consistent score with substantial input from MISCU in establishing that.
So if you arrive at something slightly different from this bill, we would try to correct that later. Is that correct?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay. Any further questions? All right, hearing none. All those in favor of, well, I guess what we're just going to do is lay this over for inclusion.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative, and thank you for cleaning up some of the language in the bill. Moving right along, Representative Maslow. This is one of the bills that has been referred to us, but has not actually arrived, so we can make no changes to this bill. But it will still be available for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. And that is, in fact, my motion is that House File 1680 be laid over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill.
For some reason, there was a delay in 1 or 2 days of bills being moved because I believe somebody had surgery. Something happened like that. So sometimes we have little glitches in our system. Also, on the back of your copy is an amendment which actually goes with a different bill. So you are getting a clean copy. Just don't look at the back of 1680.
That's somewhat reassuring, Madam Chair. I was unaware that I had an amendment to my bill.
And actually, I think it is the first time our ABLE CLA has had anything like this happen. So Representative Mesmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Most of you heard House File 1680 in the Education Policy and Reform Committee on Tuesday, so I won't go over it in great detail. I'll simply say that this continues the pattern that Representative Sikora began with her bill today in terms of people getting along. This is the product of the Minnesota Student Services Coalition, which it involves the licensed student support services, including school nurses, school counselors, school social workers, and school psychologists, all working together in a collaborative effort here. Further, this is a bill that carries plenty of authors from both sides of the aisle. Again, we're working on collaborating every way that we can here. The concept of the bill is really in three parts. One is to encourage school districts to maintain these student support services for the benefit of the students. The second is to encourage school districts to look for additional sources of funding where they're able to provide additional positions. And the third is to consider the nationally established ratios and the typical workloads to identify what the proper ratios are to have within the school districts. With me, I have Mr. Ralph Maves from the Minnesota Student Services Coalition to speak to the bill.
Thank you, sir. Welcome to the committee.
My name is Ralph Maves, and I'm from the Student Services Coalition for Effective Education. I wasn't really sure what I was going to say today because I guess I said most of what I needed to say the other day in House Education Policy. This is a bill that's been before both bodies the last couple of years, and this will be the third year. And we just feel it's very important in terms of recognizing the work that Student Support Services do and for districts and the department to just examine how these services could be enhanced perhaps to better serve children and young people with respect to helping them achieve to their potential in school, to provide for their safety, and to enhance their physical, emotional, and social well-being. Thank you.
Are there any questions? Representative Grothen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In addition to what they've already said, to me, the next most important part of this bill is that it is everybody working together, and they're all listed here, and we don't have anybody trying for their own bill and that sort of thing. So I compliment Representative Meslow on that accomplishment. I think it's huge.
Thank you.
Yes.
Madam Chair and committee members, I did want to emphasize we do get along most of the time.
Actually, we all get along most of the time when it all boils down to it. We do know how to get along, and we do that pretty well at times. Just to give us a plug here. I see no further questions. Representative Meslow, we will have your bill shortly, and we will then consider it for inclusion.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Thank you. All right, moving along to another of the three bills that were held up for some strange reason, to Representative Kelleher, and that is House File 762, which we will not move at this time. But we will hear... have an informational hearing on. Representative Kelleher.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. And you have an amendment for this bill, so I guess you'll probably just have to hold that, but I could explain what it addresses at the end so that
you could explain it
at
yes.
some point we can...
Probably somebody else on the committee could move this when we're putting our bill together.
That would be terrific. All right. Well, thank you for hearing this bill. This bill is... a bill that deals with mental health screening, and it really gets at early intervention. The bill deals with the notice to parents on the truancy, a truancy issue. If their student is truant, parents get a notice currently that goes through a set of options that they have that may be helpful in addressing truancy. And one of the things that would be very helpful is if parents are notified that mental health issues could be a possible issue in a truancy issue. We know that 1 in 10 children are affected by mental health issues, and these, frankly, are issues that we should not be ignoring. This bill moves us in that direction, and I have with me today Sue Abderholden, and she has further testimony for the bill.
Ms. Abderholden.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sue Abderholden, Executive Director of the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill of Minnesota. I just want to say I did have an opportunity to sing Kumbaya earlier this morning based on the amendment, so I'm hoping that everyone is now okay with it. First, I just want to say that when you look at all the research, there are many underlying root causes of truancy. One of them may, in fact, be mental illness. And so if we want to really address the underlying causes, we should look at that. We all know that it's important to stop truant behavior because that often leads to delinquency. We know, particularly when you look at young people who are in the juvenile justice system, over 70% of them have a diagnosed mental illness. So, you know, I think there is a linkage there that we want to start earlier rather than later, waiting until they end up in the juvenile justice system. I want to make it very clear that in this bill, the screening is not mandatory. This is permissive with a large capital P. What we're trying to do is plant the idea with schools that if you really want to get to the bottom of truancy, you might want to look at doing a mental health screening. There are many low-cost, even free tools available on the Internet. There is one called the Pediatric Symptom Checklist, which is, this is how big it is. So, it, you know, this is nothing intrusive. This is very short. Often families can fill it out. Sometimes, depending on the age, the actual student fills it out. Families are an integral part of the truancy issue, you know, in all parts of the legislation, and they would be involved in this, too. You would get parental permission. Parents would get access to what, you know, what happened after the tool. How did my child rate on it? We did also mention the legislation that the truancy centers could suggest to the schools some classroom modifications for these students. A lot of students who have a mental illness do not end up in special education. They don't even end up on a 504 plan. But there are many things that schools can do to support those students to stay in school, you know, to do well academically. I will just mention and make clear that a screening tool is not a diagnosis. So you use the tool just to say, should we look at this child further? It is not a diagnosis at all. So it will then be up to a parent to decide, well, should I take my child to my family physician, or should I call a psychiatrist? Should I take them to counseling to see if they, you know, need a if they have a diagnosis or something like that? But this does not put a label on any child. It simply gives us an idea of where the child is in kind of a normative way. So I would urge your support of this bill.
And Madam Chair, the amendment that we can't deal with today, but hopefully you'll deal with in the future, the A1 amendment, addresses two concerns that were brought to our attention. We started this bill in the Jobs and Economic Development Committee. We're not quite sure why, but we did, and that was good. And Representative Wilkin raised a concern about parents' access to the assessment tool. And so this amendment is chiefly drafted to address that very concern. It is made clear that a mental health screening of a continuing truant student is accessible to the parent or guardian, and as part of the school data record that the parent already has access to. And as well as it also makes it clear at on page 2 that a school that does not offer the mental health screening under clause 6 is not required to provide information about the screening and its notice to the parent or legal guardian. This was an issue that the School Board Association brought to us, so we wanted to acknowledge that there may be school districts who would not be offering this, and they are okay with that amendment.
And also, I don't know if you mentioned, but it appears to me the parent or guardian would have to agree to the screening. It wouldn't be done by the school on its own.
Madam Chair, this is not an effort to play gotcha with anyone. This is really an issue about helping students and families come together to deal with what could be an underlying issue.
And in many cases, this may be a lazy parent, huh? Just doesn't get their kid out there in the morning.
Well, Madam Chair, there are many reasons for truancy, as we are aware, and one of the things I think we can help with here is making sure that if there are more serious, persistent issues underlying that we at least give people the awareness and options to deal with it.
I'm just always reminded of a story, somebody who made phone calls for the school. And this was about a child who was consistently, you know, quite often missing school. And the mother said, well, the bus comes at 8 o'clock, and I don't even get up until 8 o'clock, so what do you expect? So I'm always reminded of that when we look at these things.
Well, Madam Chair, my children start school at 7:30 in the morning, and there are so many mornings that they and I wish that the alarm bell didn't ring at 6:05 a.m. to get ready.
Are there questions for Representative Kelleher? Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair, Representative Kelleher, I can assure you that when the piece comes forward and the amendment is offered, hopefully by Representative Greiling, that I will be voting for the amendment, because it does alleviate one, not immediately or totally, but one of the concerns I have, which is that Clause 8, which is the clause which informs the parents of the potential juvenile court proceedings may be used as a lever to push people into Clause 6, the new Clause 6, if you know what I mean. And that's a concern that I have. But the amendment does tighten that up a little bit. Right. I'll just share with you as we move forward that when the amendment's offered, that's definitely a yes vote for me. I'm not sure about the entire piece yet, but it helps a lot.
Okay. Thank you, Representative.
Representative Grawling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Kelleher, I'll talk to Representative Biskin.
Thank you.
I understand she's really good at arm twisting. All right. Have no other questioners here. So this bill will be laid aside, assuming we will get the green jacket one of these days, and it will probably be taken up at the time that we are actually working on our bill, because this is essentially our last hearing, I hope, on just hearing bills.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members.
Thank you very much. Representative Dietrich. And we have the same situation with yours. Three of you got caught in this cute little glitch, so. Oh, and folks, if you're looking for the amendment that Representative Dietrich has for her bill, it's on the back of Representative Meslow's bill. But it's coming around again.
I think that demonstrates his support for this bill.
All right.
Madam Chair, I'm trying to decide whether it's germane to my bill.
Representative Dietrich moves file 834 before the committee. Whoops, I can't move it. Sorry about that, Representative. It'll be done later. Please go ahead. Okay. Go ahead and describe 834.
Okay. House File 834 grants school districts authority to offer certain rewards for people who would provide accurate, valuable information that would lead to the apprehension and arrest of a person or persons who have committed a crime or crimes against school property or school personnel. I have somebody here who would like to speak to the bill from the Minnesota School Board Association, and he will give us a little bit of the legal context of the necessity for such a bill. Kirk?
Sir.
Madam Chair, my name is Kirk Schneier, and I'm on staff of the Minnesota School Board Association. And this is an issue that we've had occur in our office a couple times in phone calls related to whether school districts could offer rewards for crimes that are committed against school district personnel or property. And we found out, and I believe the state auditor mails this out to school districts in terms of what are public purpose expenditures. And the state auditor is opinion that expending funds for rewards would not be allowable. And we would argue that on the other hand, that crimes against taxpayer dollar funded buildings and teachers and board members and administrators makes a great deal of sense in providing a reward to those students or individuals who provide accurate and reliable information. So this issue came before the MSBA Delegate Assembly and was supported by our delegates, and we would encourage your support on this. It's not something, we're not looking for police powers, we're not looking for any grand authority here, we just think it makes sense and may act as a deterrent for some students who may be considering crimes against buildings or personnel. So we encourage your support on this bill.
I'd like to just clarify, too, that since this bill has not arrived in its new form with us, that House File 834 was amended by this amendment, which was adopted in the Policy Committee. Mm-hmm. So the amendment's already adopted. All right. Representative Meslow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. While we're clarifying, Representative Dietrich, I just want to make sure that I've got this right. The bill could be read to say that a reward may be offered for any crime committed against a school district employee, whether it had anything to do with their employment or not. So that in theory, I don't know, someone who was a teacher who was assaulted by their spouse is a school district employee who is now a victim of a crime. But I presume that the intent of the bill is to address crimes committed against this group of people because of their connection to the schools. Have I got that correct?
Exactly. Exactly.
Thank you.
Are there further questions? All right.
Thank you, Mr. Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Schweiderwin. If somebody is planning some action, right? Is the planning of some action, criminal action, a crime?
Mr. Schneiderwin?
Madam Chair, I'm not sure that it would be. I think that this bill only addresses after the fact that a student or an individual would share that information.
Madam Chair.
Representative Bissett.
Maybe some of our lawyers on this table, around this table, would know, because the question is, can this language be used to help prevent some catastrophe from potentially happening with students who have information that somebody is planning to commit a crime? Or is this bill only restricted to information after the crime's already been written? And maybe Representative Meswell has an answer for me, Madam Chair.
I'd like to hear from Representative Meswell and then allow the author an opportunity to comment also.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Biskins, I was trying to decide whether to put my other hat on and talk about that. There are two statutes that would deal with crimes that have not been carried out. One would be conspiracy, that talks about a group of two or more people who are planning to commit a crime. That in itself is a crime, and so it would apply in that situation. The other would be attempt, and an attempted crime is when there has been an act that has been committed that is a substantial step toward the completion of the crime. That wouldn't necessarily require a group of two or more people to act. But those are two different things that constitute crimes, even though the act hasn't fully been carried out. And I presume it would be the intention of Representative Dietrich that it would apply to those situations.
Representative Dietrich.
I would agree with Representative Menzel. Thank you.
All right. Are there further questions or comments? Thank you very much, Representative Meswell, for that clarification. It seemed to me that it would apply in a planning, information both ways, that if there's information out there, that you would get it before a crime or you might get it after a crime, but it would apply in both instances. Representative Dietrich.
Yes, in the amendment, we speak to the Department of Education being asked to write a model policy for a school board to adopt before they implement this bill, this law. And so I think that what we would want to do is, when we advise them, is speak to them about some of those conditions for school boards, so that school boards are clearer about that before they implement this policy or their policy.
Okay. Are there any other comments or questions? If not, we will whip right along here. Thank you, Representative Dietrich, and your bill will be laid over until we get your bill. All right, Representative Pennis. Mm-hmm.
Madam Chair, it took me a while to get up.
You look pretty comfortable over there. I will move your bill. Representative Pettis moves House File, I move House File 1811 to be heard before the committee and laid over for possible inclusion. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. I'm going to be very brief, and then I have a very competent testifier here. This bill made it into the House Education Finance Omnibus Bill last year, and is also recommended by the governor. It includes equity aid for telecommunications internet reimbursement to schools throughout the state, and it is prescriptive on what does qualify and what doesn't qualify. And with that, I would like to turn it over to my testifier.
Mr. Wallace.
Madam Chair, Committee, Sam Wallace with the Minnesota Rural Education Association. I'll be brief because the committee's heard some other testimony on this bill or similar legislation a few days ago. But I do want to reiterate MREA's support for telecom equity aid for school districts with extremely high telecom costs. As you know, school districts are faced with ever-increasing telecom capacity pressures as we move toward online learning, online data reporting and sharing, and online testing, and having a revenue source dedicated for telecom access is important as schools face these increased demands. And Madam Chair, I'll just wrap up with that. Thank you.
And Madam Chair, I will stand for questions if I can answer any.
Are there any questions on this? I think we're all pretty familiar with this piece. And it is in the governor's bill at this point in time. So,
and Madam Chair, I would like to see that stay in there. just
as an aside, you didn't do this for nothing?
No. And it's been kind of a long, rough day, and this is probably the most pleasant part, so you know it's been bad. Thank you.
Well, Representative Pennis, I hope very much that your day gets better. And your bill will be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Member. Madam Chair.
All right. What we have before us now with 813 is a bill that we talked about the other day with regard to the school school trust lands. And I think I'll just stay here. We had to make a decision on some of the things. I did visit with some of you. We talked about this a little bit. And so what I have here is the aggregate bill and then an amendment to the aggregate bill, which theoretically encompasses the initiatives that we were interested in doing. This is not the ongoing management fee. This is the initiatives that we talked about. So if you look at A2, and I'll move 813 before the committee, I think we laid it over for continuing discussion the other day. If you look at the amendment A2, they had a number of proposals, including land survey, looking at some lands that we might exchange and accelerating those exchanges, land sales, and possible commercial leasing of school trust lands that would bring us in some more funds. These are all designed to enhance the school trust fund lands payments that we get in the future to be added to the trust fund. The 252 under Section 4 is, I guess, the one that if we did nothing else would be quite important, and that is $252,000, which is 60%. In other words, the permanent school trust lands versus the university trust lands. This was the 60% of the amount suggested for activities and exploration that might enhance what's going on right now in the minerals area. I think, is Mr. Bryce here? You're here? Oh, he is here. You're hiding, Mr. Bryce. Would you come down for just a minute? Tell us a little bit about, you know, what kind of possibilities there are briefly, and then we can decide if you want to do part or all of this amendment. Because this has to be sent over to Environment, mm-hmm. Environment Finance. Mr. Bryce.
Madam Chair, my name is Bill Bryce. I'm the Director of Lands and Minerals, and you want me to respond on the minerals revenue generation portion, I think.
Yes,
and
please.
The projects that we would work on there first are ones we talked about briefly the other day. We'd look at the drill core analysis that has led to
additional exploration and discoveries in the past, and we would do that work. We would do work on severed mineral rights to make sure that we are clear on who owns what. We would do work on some of the permitting. We would do some work on some of the geologic mapping and those kinds of projects. And you had a handout the other day that kind of lists those projects, and those are the ones that we would work on.
Are there any comments, questions, et cetera? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Sikora. And members, you did receive a handout that has a page 6 on the front with the table 1, accumulated revenue from state mineral leases by lease type fiscal years 1890 through 2004. I copied this from a report that Mr. Bryce left with Representative Sikora and me this morning. And I would call your attention, most of all, to the next page, 7, because if you recall, I asked the question the last time Mr. Bryce visited about the revenue that we have received over the years from the minerals, and it's laid out in Table 2 for what I had asked for the last 10 years, 1994 to 2004. So if you notice there, it's divided into the categories of school trust, university trust, tax forfeited, other lands, and special advance royalties. So if you track to the far right, you'll see the total revenue. And I just thought it was very appropriate that Mr. Bryce did supply us with this data. I have some other reports, too, if you're interested, that I can share with you that he brought. But I had Bethany copy just 6 through 11 because I thought that information might be most interesting to you as we debate this issue. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah, I think this gives you some idea of, with a little investment of money that's being made off the trust lands, that we might really improve what we're getting in the trust lands, and especially now in the minerals area. I mean, I think the other things are important too, the survey, so that we know what we have exactly, looking at how we might create new income. I think all of these would make a difference, but I think that's, you know, the will of the committee, and I would like to hear what you all think. And if you have questions for Mr. Bryce, please go ahead and ask those. Representative Heidgerken.
Madam Chair, thank you, and Mr. Bryce. I hate to get back at it again where we left out last time, but again, I think I'm going to bypass, because I think the decision will be made in the environment. Am I correct on that? I believe the ultimate decision is made in Representative Osmond's committee, at least at the House level.
Madam Chair,
Mr. Bryce,
Representative, our budget is finally approved as part of the Omnibus Environment and Agriculture Bill, I think it's called.
Thank you.
But I don't believe, Mr. Bryce, that all of these pieces are a part of that bill. All of the enhancements are not a part of that bill, are they? Isn't that something that's our decision?
Madam Chair, I don't know how to answer the question. There are the separate bills that we've talked about in this committee, and then there's the governor's budget bill, which is House File 1420, and I think they both have parallel language in them. And the Environment and Natural Resources, of course, hasn't as yet adopted a bill. So what they elect to include in there, I hope they'll consider your recommendations.
We hope so too, Mr. Bryce. any other questions or any comments? I guess what I would probably, the procedure is, I will move Amendment A2, and so we are discussing it at this point in time, whether or not you wish to do any of this. But I couldn't see any other way of getting it before the committee today in a compact way and bringing it to your attention, because I think we should take some action on this and not just leave DNR doing whatever DNR wants to do. I think we should indicate what our priorities are here. Any comments from anyone?
No.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate what you're trying to do, and I appreciate the thought, and it's quite appropriate. I wonder, though, if it might be even better to go one step further and actually keep the money in the education department from this committee, all right, and direct the commissioner of education, right, to contract out this management. Now, of course, DNR may be the best player for them to contract with, all right, but at least then the entire control of the dollars does indeed stay within the Department of Education on how the management takes place. But it's a thought. I appreciate where you're going with the amendment. All right, it's one step further than the bill was itself in maintaining the control, but I hope we continue to think about this as we look forward to creating our omnibus bill.
I think we did talk about looking to this to the future. I don't know how possible it is for right now, but Representative, somebody else over here. Hi, Griffin, you had your...
Thank you, Representative, Madam Chair, and Representative Diskins, to your point, I think we need to have that directive come out of our committee, because my understanding is still it's going to take a statutory change in law in order for them to do what some of the things that they are attempting to accomplish doing. But this would be, I think we need to do that from our committee as well. I agree with you.
I'm sorry, I'm unclear. What were you saying as far as the amendment goes?
Yeah, as far as the amendment goes, I think it's necessary that we safeguard the monies that we're getting right now. Whatever we are doing now, we need to emphasize that we don't want to change. We need that message to come that we like the program as set up, and we don't want any change in statutory language that may put us in at risk of receiving those monies in the future.
I understand what you're saying about that, Representative Heidkirk, and I was wondering, what are you saying about this amendment? Yes or no? Okay. That's what wasn't clear to me. The other bill, which was the ongoing $1.5 million management fee, we're just laying that over. And if we can find another solution for their budget, I'm still working on that. But I don't think it was the will of this committee that we take it out of the permanent trust lands. This is enhancements to what might happen with the trust fund, and I can support that. I have a lot of trouble with the ongoing management fee coming out of the trust. Representative Dorn.
Madam Chair, kind of a quick concurrence with point that Representative Biskins made. I know when we talked about it informally, we talked about having a little bit more of a check and balance. So that I think that is something we need to look at. And on the technical side, I think there's not room for all of the ins in the amendment. And at the end of line 5, if we deleted that, we would make a technical correction you could incorporate. And, it's just a just a typo, I think.
I'm sorry, I just said to Mr. Crow, what did he just say?
We're going to strike the end of line 5.
The state forest.
That's all.
You're right. Yeah. I will incorporate that change. Thank you. I just was... All right. Shall we look at these as separate pieces? You know, the one that's called Appropriation to Accelerate Land Exchanges, which essentially looks at a survey of what we have, what land we might exchange, sell, lease, etc. Are you all right with that amount of money? In each of these 2 years of the fiscal year, we would get a report in the next, beginning of the next fiscal, beginning in actually 07, we would get another report on what was happening with this, but a lot of this is kind of a long-term thing. We may not see a lot of results within 2 years. So does the committee feel that the $300,000 per year is appropriate? Would you want to do, if not, would you want to do $300,000 for one of the years? I think, you know, you need to make a decision here. So I would suggest that we divide this amendment and vote on Section 3 separately from Section 4. Is everybody all right with that? Representative Grotting, any comments?
Madam Chair, I think that's a good plan, and I look more favorably on Section 3.
All right. All right, why don't we vote on Section 3 at this point in time? Is there any further discussion of Section 3? All right, hearing none. Representative Newman.
Where does the $300,000 figure come from? How did we arrive at this?
This is an initiative in a sense, that the DNR has brought to us, but that we asked them 2 years ago to look at ways that we could further the income that goes into the trust.
I understand.
Okay. And this comes from the...
The idea was the $300,000 figure.
They came up with the $300,000 figure as cost for doing various activities. And where have I got that? With it being the inventory, they figured $150,000 a year in the first year and $125,000 in the second year, and all we're looking at right now is 2 years. We're not suggesting we're going to do this forever. Analyzing new income opportunities, looking at accelerated exchanges of land, which means that, like we currently have school trust land sitting within a state park, totally inaccessible to us. Those kinds of exchanges or sales of land that might have some value that don't have any particular value to us as a trust fund. So that's essentially what is included in this. Representative Heidkirchen.
Madam Chair, just so committee members understand that when you look at line 5, appropriated from the state forest suspense account, in the past, my understanding is these funds came from general revenue. So we're making a change here now. Previously, these funds that they were receiving...
No, this is not the management, Representative Heidkirchen, and we've actually never done this before.
Right, and previous to this, they've received all of their funds from general revenue. We're making
right.
a change now. These monies that were taken out of the state forest suspense account previously have been set aside, and the monies were earmarked towards education. And right now we're taking, basically what we are doing is we're taking education dollars, and we will be taking education dollars now instead of general revenue dollars. Am I correct in that?
No, Representative Heidkirchen, this is we ask for some things that we might do that might enhance our income in the future. These are some of the suggestions they came up with. These are not things that would be done.
I understand that, but the change here is previously it had been out of the general revenue. Now it comes out of the state forest suspense account. Am I right?
I'll ask Mr. Crow to explain it. I don't think I explained it very well.
Madam Chair and members, these initiatives had always been discussed as coming out of permanent school fund revenues and had not come out of general fund revenues in the sense that they would generate an investment return. If you invest in these types of activities, you generate more return. So the idea was that has always been, well, always over the, since it was originally discussed about a year ago, has been that the funding for these activities would come out of the permanent school fund receipts. So the other piece that is clearly a shift from general fund activity is the governor's recommendation that you heard in a different bill to take that about $1.5 million or so out of the general fund and fund it with permanent school fund money. So these, I think the funding for these two ideas has always been different than what the governor is proposing in his budget now. So.
These were essentially ideas that, you know, we were looking for. And we don't certainly have to do all of them if you're uncomfortable with doing them. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like Ms. Larson to look at the wording on line 5 and the beginning of line 6 of this amendment. I think we have a problem with the words if we're going to act on this amendment. I'm looking at Ms. Larson from the state forest suspense account in for school trust lands. I think we need a correction there.
We just.
Oh, I was gone. Was I reading something else? I'm sorry.
Maybe sleeping?
No, I wasn't sleeping, but I was reading something. So I'm sorry. Thank you.
I'm sorry, Representative Erickson. I can't resist teasing you a little bit.
No, I was busy reading something else. I'm sorry. My mind is some other place. So.
All right. I think we've probably discussed this as much as we're going to discuss it. We've talked about it for an hour or so the other day.
But, Madam Chair, maybe.
Mr. Bryce, staff wants to know if this should definitely come out of the state forest suspense account?
Madam Chair, all of the income other than sales and minerals goes to the forest suspense account, and then the costs for forest management are calculated, and then the remainder goes to the trust fund. So this is the right source. The only there is one correction, though. Normally you don't appropriate money to a particular division. You appropriate it to the Commissioner of Natural Resources. And so in line 6, it would read for school trust lands to the Commissioner of Natural Resources, and then it would say to accelerate the things that are there. That would be the correct way, I think, of how money is appropriated. And the same is true in Section 4. We would get the Division of Lands and Minerals out of there.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for picking up on that. We will make... Representative Dimmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To that point, one of the things we were talking about over here is the appropriation maybe should be to the Department of Education, who then can contract with these divisions or whatever, so that we're appropriating through the department and letting them have some purview and some...
Okay.
Stay in here, and then we can do this later too, I suppose. But,
Madam Chair, where does this bill go?
Well, it stays with us.
It stays.
No. Actually, this is what's going to go back to them.
That's what I thought.
Committee on Agriculture, Environment, and Natural Resources Finance. So there's really no later.
Right.
We kind of have to do this now, unless we make that change, and then it probably stays with us. And then I'm not. I guess then the money would. The language would go back over to you in some way, shape, or form.
Madam Chair, the only part that I'm not sure about is how the Department of Education would get money out of the forest suspense account. I don't think they probably don't have the authority to do that at the moment. But if the concern is whether we will come and sit down and report to you on our progress and whether we've accomplished anything. I think you might want to just stick that into the bill that says that DNR will report to the Education Finance Committee at your request on our progress on each of these things, and you would get the same result.
Well, Representative Dimmer.
Well, Madam Chair, just so I'm clear, do we as a Education Committee then have the authority to appropriate from the State Forest Suspense Account to whomever who then can contract? I'm thinking that the Department of Education should someplace be involved in this, as opposed to us appropriating to committees that or departments we don't really deal with, and then that way
we don't have this money to appropriate. This would be in the State Forest Suspense Account, and it would be taken from the Forest Suspense Account to do these particular things.
Well, Madam Chair, we're appropriating. This is saying we're appropriating it from the State Forest Expense Account for school trust lands to the Division of Lands and Minerals. So we are appropriating.
Madam Chair,
but not from our budget.
You're not actually appropriating the Environment and Environment and Agriculture does the appropriation in this case. What you're doing is reviewing a bill that they referred to you and want to know what you think about it.
I see.
I'm going to have Mr. Crow talk to this because we have four more bills and I would like to get, make some decision on this, whatever.
I think part of this is a question of process and part is a question of intent. What Mr. Bryce says is correct, that you are not kind of the last committee, the committee of last stop, or where the decision about where the appropriation will come from. However, you have every right to, as long as the appropriation fits the requirements of expenditures from the forest suspense account, you can appropriate that money to whoever you want to manage those lands for forest purposes. Now, obviously, you're referring this bill to the Committee on Agriculture, Environment, Natural Resources, Finances, so there's a good chance they may not agree with you having the Department of Education contract or manage those lands directly. But you certainly, as a committee, have the ability to make that change.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. I understand.
Representative Bradley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We don't have the final word, obviously, but I would like, and that's why I'm going to vote against Section 4 in the same sentiment as Representative Heidgerken, that it's a strong statement from the Education Committee that we want the funds from the Permanent School Fund to be used, as always, for students and not to be eaten away because the DNR is short of funding.
Well, I think our best shot at raising more money is through the minerals side. But we will vote on each of those separately. Are we ready to vote on Section 3?
So, Madam Chair, did we make that change then to the Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources? Did we just?
Yes.
Okay.
I would like to incorporate that, if that is okay. Commissioner of DNR, since it was a mistake to put lands and minerals in here, I apologize for that.
And, Madam Chair, do we need to put in this amendment, the fact that we would like them to report to us?
You know, I think that's fine. I think we could ask Ms. Larson to come up with language appropriate to that. However, any time I have ever asked for a report, since they have been very, very willing to make a report. But it certainly doesn't hurt to put it in here. But I will commend them on the fact that they have responded whenever I have hollered.
It's fine.
The squeaky wheel gets the grease, right, Mr. Bryce?
I try to respond to everybody who asks me questions.
So as a committee, are you ready to vote on Section 3?
Mm-hmm.
All right. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, this portion, Section 3, does pass. Okay, Section 4, is there a further discussion of Section 4, the Minerals Revenue Fund? Hearing none?
Madam Chair.
Representative Newman.
I think I agree with you that it would be a good idea to do something to enhance the mineral exploration. It would be an investment in the future. But when I look at Section 4, I really question whether or not we are taking money out of the school fund, giving it to the DNR and losing all control over it.
The Commissioner. Mr. Bryce, would you comment on that, please?
Madam Chair, I couldn't hear the representative.
That's right. You're not speaking into your mic.
I apologize. Madam Chair, Ms. Bryce, my concern with Section 4 is not that we make an investment in the future in terms of minerals, because we probably would make some money on behalf of education if we do that. I mean, I'm looking at it more as an investment. My concern is that it looks like we're appropriating the money to the DNR and, in effect, losing all control over it, and it's really our money. And I think that the Department of Education should be looking over that money and having the DNR report back to us.
Madam Chair, I guess I'm not sure how to respond. I don't have any trouble with reporting back on what we've done and what we've failed or succeeded at or anything like that. We're more than happy to tell you and to show you and do whatever you'd like on regarding that. In fact, I think it would be really good if your committee maybe did a field trip this summer to look at some of the minerals activities, because this is an unprecedented time when we've really made a lot of money all of a sudden, and we'd like to show you about it.
Madam Chair, my point is more than just asking the DNR to report back to us and tell us what they have done with it. Mm-hmm. It's more to the point they would follow our lead. We would authorize them or tell them or give them some kind of instruction what to do with our money.
I think in a way we are sort of doing that. We're asking them to explore and find us ways to enhance our minerals income. Yeah, I guess, you know, I'm not exactly an expert on this. Would this be something, Representative Biskins, that maybe our advisory council could be the group that took some authority over this? Do you think we could do it that way? Representative Biskins is chair of the advisory council along with Senator Kelly in the Senate. So that might be a way to oversee that? Okay. And Representative Ms. Larson, how about if you could give us a little language that would we would add to this as the oversight language. Representative Doran, this is taking much longer than it should have. I have four more bills. Representative Doran.
I'll be real fast, Madam Chair. I was
not your fault.
Thank you. I was just thinking that Section 3 has to go into House File 813 and move along to the Environment Finance Committee. But since the permanent school fund, as I understand it, is within our jurisdiction, do we have the time to work on the Section 4 part, and could that travel in our bill, or does it have to go also to the Finance Committee? And I kind of have the same concerns. I like what we're after. I'm not sure yet if we've got the best way to do it, but do we... Could we act on this piece later because it would travel in ours, and Mr. Strom could help me understand that.
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Doran, I think you've got a couple of different things going on here, and one of the real issues, I think, is to separate an internal turf issue because of House custom about how we get subject matters from what your ability and or things you can do as legislators do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a decision for you all as a committee to make. There's nothing that says that this committee can't tell the Department of Natural Resources not to do something. That's mm-hmm. not the form that we've followed, but your role as a legislator isn't constrained by something right. regarding the permanent school fund with this. It's constrained by the usual procedures of which committees assert domain over what subject areas. So I think to a degree you could certainly put something in your bill directing how permanent school fund money ought to be used. But by the same token, the Natural Resources Bill can put in their budget decisions about how the Department of Natural Resources is going to be funded.
Mm-hmm. Are you comfortable with us? Well, let's just vote on Section 4. Because I don't think we can resolve all of this. I agree on the whole oversight thing, but I don't think we can resolve this here today without a little more research and a little more time. And I don't think it's in our purview to hold on to the money and say, you know, I don't think we are at the point where we can do that. So what I would suggest, what is the language that you came up with, Ms. Larson?
Representative Sikora, members, on the document H0813A2, on page 1, line 23, after the word and, insert, analyze how best to.
Oh, to expand income?
Yes. On page 1, line 24, delete opportunity analysis and insert opportunities. And then, after the period, insert, and this is to your question about oversight, the commissioner must report to the Education Finance Committees of the legislature on the expenditure of the appropriations under this section upon request.
And to the advisory council, or do we not bother to put that in here?
You better know what's going on.
Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I think the intent is clear that we're making an investment in trying to enhance income and opportunities for income from these school trust lands. I think that's clear to Mr. Bryce. I think it's clear in the language here. We can look in the future as far as we want to rearrange how the appropriations are, and if the commission decides they want to look at it, they can do it. Madam Chair, I personally am comfortable with the way we have this here and think we should vote and move on.
So you're okay with the language that was just added? Is everybody all right with the change that we just made? All right. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. The bill is amended. Or this amendment has been amended and adopted. And now I think it's just a matter of laying over 813. No, we got to pass it out. We're passing it to Committee on Agriculture, Environment, and Natural Resources Finance.
Madam Chair?
Representative Moore.
If you'll call on me. Staff just suggested that one of the things we could consider tightening it up even a little bit more is basically saying that the dollars are for new activities, not for funding any of the
I don't know if I have it exactly right, but it really specifies that we're interested in doing a new activity in terms of inventory to enhance, and not any, you know, can't be mixed up with other operations or used. I know that's their intent, and that's what they would do, but the language would maybe tighten it even a little bit more. I don't know if that would be something that would add to the comfort level of folks, or if they're ready to vote on it as it is and ready to move on.
Mr. Crowe.
Madam Chair and members, if your goal in this bill is to direct the Natural Resources Committee as to what your intent is, it may be useful for you to have language, I think what Representative Dorn is getting at, that says the DNR may not expend permanent school fund money for activities that it's currently undertaking with general fund money. In other words, the other bill that you heard that had some permanent school fund expenditures for existing activities in the Department of Natural Resources, mm-hmm. you would, instead of just making a statement by not moving that bill, you're making an affirmative statement that that is not what you want them to do.
That's great. I like that.
It tightens it a little bit more, I think.
Would you repeat that language, mm-hmm. and then we'll adopt that language?
You don't want
to. Must not.
Madam Chair?
Mr. Bryce?
I don't know what that language, whether that's good or bad language, but some of the projects that we presented to you the other day are things like land and mineral title research. Currently, we do a little bit of it on a particular piece of land, and this is an acceleration of land and mineral research. You don't want us not to do that. So we just need to figure out how to make the language so that we can do the accelerations of some of these projects along with the new stuff. I'm sorry.
Representative Grant.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think it's better without the new language, because I think we're going into contortions to try to justify the fact that we're using permanent school funding for something that should be appropriated to the DNR by the general fund. And we're trying to excuse ourselves by saying that we're doing it to enhance this revenue and that it will be new. And really what we you know, this department has been slashed in half with previous budget cuts. And even so, they've come up with $20 million new, doing what they're doing, not new things, for the fund. And we need them to do that. I'm just objecting that we have backed ourselves into this kind of a corner, where in spite of all of that, we're taking money from the permanent school fund that should go to the students. So I'm not, with or without this new language, I'm not going to buy into this. And I hope others will join me.
Representative Bernardi.
Madam Chair, I was just wanted to make a recommendation. If we could take this, if we're almost done, let's finish it. But if we can take it up right after, let's do it after we get through the people that are down here to testify. I don't want to miss the people that are here to testify. That was just it.
I wish you to come up with that 15 minutes. I think let's vote it up or down.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think we've demolished this one to a great extent and embellished it, demolished it, whatever you want to call it. Don't worry about that last bit of language. I think it's pretty clear here what our intent is. All those in favor of passing House File 813 with recommendation for passage to the Committee on Agriculture, Environment, and Natural Resources Finance, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
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 It passes.
Good.
All right. We are moving on to, first of all, 1927. All we are doing is laying that over for inclusion in our bill, 1927. I checked with people, and that seems to be the best route. 2414, we will take 5 minutes on 2414. Yes, I just laid 1927 over for possible inclusion. That was what we were going to do with it anyway. Mm-hmm. All right, we have my communication. Yeah.
want to know, sir, did you vote on the last
Representative, yes. Would you like to take over?
This is you. I'll be quick.
Representative Sequoia, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, I'd like to move House File 2414 before the committee for possible inclusion. What this is this is similar to something that Representative Rood had before us a while back. She has since moved her bill to GovOps. I don't know why, but anyway, it's gone. And what this does is, I think, maybe clarifies a little bit more one of the things that she was trying to do, which is looking at our data management as we move forward with value added and figure out ways that we're going to be transferring data back and forth between the department and the teachers in the schools, the school district, et cetera, and look at whether there's more that we should be doing. This sets up a little working group, not a task force. It doesn't have to go to GovOps. It's a working group that would just take a look at what should we be doing, what are our needs, and then if we are able to fund this, there'd be the potential for an RFP for the Student Information and Reporting System. So it's pretty simple, but I'll let a couple people who've been working with this for quite a period of time now to discuss it briefly.
Mr. Chair, Mark Manning, Technology Director, Wayzata Public Schools, District 284, formerly Director of Technology for the Department of Education. I think it's important that I also note that I was the Chief Engineer and Designer of the Mars system about 20 years ago. That's a long time. Whenever I think of the Twins Day Parade when they won the first World Series, I was stuck in my office writing about first Mars manual. So, but, you know, I come from that background, and I think it's important that you consider this bill today. You know, there's a couple reasons why. The first one is it's going to happen anyway. Sooner or later, we are going to have one system in the state of Minnesota. Secondly, it's only logical. Why are we dealing with 12 or 13 or 14 systems that don't talk to each other and put us in a situation where a kid transfers from Minneapolis to Wayzata, we can wait weeks for their data where we can have it at our fingertips? It's going to happen anyway, and it's only logical. Third, it's the best thing in the world for kids and keeping track of kids and understanding kids' needs, especially when they migrate between school districts. It's time to do this. It's also the best thing for parents. All parents in the state will have access to gradebook information online, where right now a majority of them don't because their district doesn't have a system that allows it. This is really about kids and parents. It's not about computer vendors who are afraid of losing business and those types of things. It will also greatly reduce the local burden and cost at the local district. Right now we pay at Wayzata District 24, we pay about $80,000 for our student system, and we got a bargain on our student system, and we're paying about another $40,000 for a tool that works with it to do No Child Left Behind reporting. This bill will eliminate that cost at the district. Well, it also makes our data available to other districts if our kids transfer. It will also allow for the transfer of records between districts. It will also provide a better database at the State Department of Education. What I like about the bill at this juncture is it's voluntary. It's not a mandate to school districts. What it does is it sets a precedent for one district. It says to Wayzata, hey, if you're ready to move to one district, we'll cover your costs for it. It's not a mandate to us saying we have to change. It will be painful for software vendors who fear loss of revenue, and I'm sure they are fearful of that. And secondly, I think it will be painful to the department, who will need to take the leadership role on implementing and maintaining data.
The department will have to deal with the vendors and the changes to computer systems that right now districts are doing independently with vendors. It will make things clearer and easier. A few closing remarks. Again, ultimately, there's going to be one system. This is a good bill to start that. It will help move data between districts, which right now is very hard to do because we have 13 different systems. When a kid arrives at a district, if this was in place, the records for that kid would be in the counselor's hands the day they arrive, not 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks later. That's basically it. We're going through this process now, looking at student systems in Wayzata, and it's a long process. It takes time, and it would be great if there was some overall state leadership to set one system. This is a bill whose time has come.
Thank you, Mr. Manning. Representative Score, you have comments or another testifier?
Pardon? Yes.
Oh, okay.
Nancy Lawrenson, who is a technology director at North St. Paul.
Yeah. Welcome, Ms. Lawrenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. I guess I can concur with Mr. Manning's observation from Wayzata. At North St. Paul, we were in the same situation that the state as a whole is in, and that we have had islands of information in our district, and there was no communication between buildings in the sense that as students transferred between buildings, same sort of a deal. They'd have to wait 2-3 days before records would arrive from one building to another. This obviously impacted the students directly, as well as the staff. We adapted a web-based, centralized database student information system back in the 99-2000 school year. And I can tell you firsthand that the improvements in our record-keeping, our reporting, and the continuity of information within our district has improved drastically. So I guess my main point here is just to look at our district as sort of a microcosm of what could happen if a system such as being suggested by this bill were in place for the state as a whole. We share a lot, a boundary. North St. Paul, Maplewood, Oakdale does share a boundary with St. Paul, which is on any given day either the largest or second largest district in the state. We have a lot of students moving back and forth between our district and St. Paul. And I know that our kids really would see the improvement in the services they get, certainly in the special education area where we're waiting often several days, if not weeks, just to get information about what their needs are. So I would also strongly support your consideration of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lawrenson. Representative Bradley, you have a question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Not really a question, just a comment. Representative Sikora, you said you weren't sure why Representative Rood sent her bill to governmental operations. And actually, as I suspect that most of us do know, that when bills are not going to be an omnibus bills, they have to, if they have groups being created or task force and so forth, all those bills have to go through governmental operations. And so I'm sure that that's why that bill went there, and that she was following procedure, being that we are not up to the deadline yet. But now, but if this is going to be considered for the omnibus bill, I would hope that we would get her bill back here as well, and then when things are in omnibus bills, they don't have to go through governmental operations. But I think we were kind of at this point with the previous hearing that Representative Rood had, and so I'm kind of perplexed why we have yet another bill introduced yesterday on the same topic, but I supported it then, and I continue to support a task force to get a handle on this, because there's clearly a problem here.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Reiling, she came and asked for permission to move the bill, and she wanted it to go to GovOps. So it went to GovOps. It never came back to us. I mean, if she wanted it in the omnibus, it could have come back to us. I quite honestly haven't checked to see if it's on the general registry or where it went. But we could certainly find out.
Representative Biskins, you have a question.
Just to follow up on what Representative Grayling said. Representative Grayling, you're absolutely right. The motion in. Talking to Representative Root, she was very conscientious of the process and of House rules, and was working the process. And there was time when the bill went through education policy. So that's why it went there, why it hasn't come out of there, or where it might be now, I don't know. But Representative Root was doing a good job at following the rules, which I don't always do, but she was very conscientious. All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Sikora.
One of the things I'd like to mention is I think what some of the savings that you would realize here is, you know, when students transfer, sometimes you have to do extensive testing and so on to figure out just where they're at and, you know, what kind of a class they should be put in or what kind of services they might happen to need. When you can get those records almost immediately, it saves you all of that time and all of that staff work to get those things done. Might result in substantial savings in that area. But just a thought. I just thought we should have this available in the event we feel it's necessary. And that's something we can talk about.
Any more questions, members? Comments? Okay, Representative Sikora, if there's no other comments or questions, we'll lay this over for future consideration with the omnibus bill.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Hagerken, do you have any testifiers? Okay, is Representative Quinkey here? Okay, Representative Hagerken, let's move on. Representative Hagerken, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House File 2421 being possible inclusion in the Senate Finance Omnibus Bill.
House Omnibus Finance Bill.
Great. Okay.
Go ahead, Representative.
Okay, House File 2421. It's been up in discussion here. I think throughout we went through testimony with Commissioner Seeger and then among other bills that had come up, and we were looking at equity, and it's been an issue that the governor had in his original proposal also. He had $88 and $101, and we were looking at things that would work out for some school districts in particular that cannot pass referendums. Back in 01 when we did the tax reform bill, we created some inequities out there, and some school districts lost as much as 75% of their property wealth. What this bill, if you before we go to it, I have an oral amendment, Mr. Chair. If you turn to page 2, line 9, after UNIP, and I need to add one sentence, and this has been worked on by a couple other members asked me to add this. The revenue under this paragraph, the following sentence will be added. The revenue under this paragraph must not exceed $100,000 per school district. And the intent here is to access as many school districts as possible with this bill. And if you look at the handout that you have, you're going to find out that there are 67 school districts that will receive as much as $8,000 or as little as $8,000 and some as much as $100,000 depending upon what referendum they have in play. The bill captures 10% of the statewide average. The statewide average in referendum is $556. So school districts could access as much as $56 under this proposal. And if you look at it, it touches both on the both sides of the aisle. Gets I know Representative Eakin, Representative Marquardt, Representative Murphy, Representative Rukavina, and Representative Lanning, myself, Representative Erickson. We touch a lot of school districts with this. And the intent of a referendum and equalization aid was to allow some school districts to access monies that are much needed for the school district. And I said I'd be very brief with that. I'm going to basically turn it over and let Mr. Tope from Minnewaska Public Schools just address the importance of that issue to Minnewaska, and then the other two testifiers, Mr. Lundell and Ms. Harsbargen, will talk about just a little bit of the equity problem that we've had.
Okay, Representative Heidgerken, we should probably deal with your question amendment first. Is everybody clear on the amendment, members? Mm-hmm. Representative Meslow.
Mr. Chair, I hate to do this, but I think it's easy. I have an oral amendment to the oral amendment.
Okay, well, I believe you can mention that, and I think Representative Heidgerken could incorporate that.
Correct. That would be my suggestion. And that is, Representative Heidgerken, at the end of your oral amendment is the phrase, per school district. My suggestion would be that we say instead, for any school district, because I think that per school district could be interpreted as an average of the districts that are involved. For any school district, I think that makes that clear, and I have addressed this with Mr. Strom, and I think he's okay with that, too.
That's okay with Mr. Strom. It's okay with me.
Okay, you'll incorporate that into your amendment, Representative Heidgerken. Okay, members, everybody clear on the amendment? Okay, everybody in favor of the amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign? Okay, the amendment is adopted. Representative Heidgerken, you.
Okay, to that matter, and I'll introduce you to Mr. John Tolp, and he'll just talk a little bit about the issue at play in Minnewaska.
Mr. Tolp.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. I understand that Minnewaska has been talked about quite extensively in this committee, so now you can put a name to the face of the Minnewaska School District. The 2001 property tax reform took away 14% of our market value in seasonal rec. It took away 42% of our referendum market value in ag land. The resulting reduction was about 33% of our referendum market value. So the property tax spread became very small on residential and commercial industrial property, making it difficult to pass a referendum. And I'm not sure if members of the committee are aware, but we have failed a referendum in November of 2002, 3, and 4, resulting in reductions of about $1 million 2 years ago, $700,000 last year, and about $900,000 this year. So this bill that Representative Heidgerken is putting forward would help our district. It's certainly not going to solve everything. We are a district that is in declining enrollment, one of the fastest growing declining enrollment districts in the state. So this bill would be helpful. Certainly they're not going to solve every issue that we have in our district, but I am in support of this bill, and I think the members should take a look at how it is affecting different school districts, not just rural districts, as Mr. Heidgerken said, but also other non-rural districts. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Tolkien. Mr. Lundell, Ms. Hasbergen, we'd like to hear from you, but we've got 5 minutes, and we have one more bill.
Okay. I'm going to be very brief, Mr. Chairman. Renee Harsbargen, Minnesota Rural Education. There are 7% of Minnesota students who don't have an excess levy, and this bill is geared to them. The reason why it's so much more important this year than other years is because if we end up with a bill that was designed much like the governor's, and I would expect that we would, there's going to be tremendous pressure on property taxes in terms of raising local revenue for school districts. And this, the reason these kids don't have a referendum is because there is resistance to property taxes already in those districts. So, good news is the governor fixed the equity formula in his budget. Here's another attempt to fix or deal with those kids in this committee. We're very confident that it will be dealt with this year, and we urge you to look at both carefully. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hasbargen. Mr. Lundell.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Brad Lundell, Executive Director of Schools for Equity and Education, and I'm sort of the Dr. Frankenstein of this equity formula. I think one of the things that happened when we first designed the bill is we never intended for districts without a referendum to not get the full benefit. We always thought, as we designed the bill, that the sliding scale would go toward all the districts in the state, so that regardless of their referendum status, so that the maximum benefit would go to districts without a referendum. During the conference committee, language was put in that excluded referenda, districts without referenda from getting the full benefit. And so I went in like Dr. Frankenstein and I left like Igor. So I think it was We certainly need to fix that, and I think that this is a good attempt to do that.
Thank you, Mr. Lundell. Any questions, members? Representative Greg?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Heigerkin, I don't see a fiscal note here.
Okay. Oh, that's the fiscal note, and I think Mr. Strom can correct me on it. It was originally, I believe, at 4.8, and it's now at 3.4 a year, million.
Okay. Any more questions, members? Representative Heigerkin, final comment?
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And with that, we will lay over House File 2421 for possible inclusion in the K-12 Omnibus Bill. Representative Krenke. Welcome to the committee, Representative Krenke.
Thank you.
I'll move your bill, Representative Krenke, House File 1462 for possible inclusion in the K-12 Omnibus Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, good to be here today. The legislation, House File 1462, is actually a rather simple bill, but it does have a lot of controversy swirling around it, so I will try to be brief and just explain my motives here in the situation. As you all know, there's the alternative facilities language that exists in statute that allows certain school districts, if they meet criteria, to have approval from the Department of Education to levy without voter approval. And I have two concerns. My first is that in 1999, the Mounds View School District had a voter-approved levy of $80 million. And the proposal was that they had projects that had gone to the commissioner, Commissioner Jacks, the commissioner of education at that time, and had received approval for projects totaling almost $85 million. Later that year in May 1999, they did have a voter-approved capital bonding levy of $80 million. Then in December of 2002, the district went before the Department of Education with regard to alternative facilities bonding and levying authority, and were accepted under the Department of Education to have alternative facilities bonding. And in 2000, then in December of that year, they received approval for a 10-year plan of $65 million. They went out and then sought a $30 million debt, and then in March 15, 2004, $15 million, and then also received in 2004 a $3.6 million pay as you go additional capital proposal. The reason I give you that background is because what the district has done in the last year has sold a parcel of land that has a very storied past that I, again, won't go into, but the district's proceeds from the sale of that property, I believe, about $6.2 million. And what this legislation does is merely say that the $6.2 million should be kept in trust and not expended on their capital projects, but rather the interest from the principal on that trust be used for operating dollars. And the reason, members, very simply, is that the district has... according to the spreadsheet from Mr. Crow, has at the current time. Where am I here? I've got to find the right number here. The district currently has $5.8 million in debt levies. Approved by the voters, 2.8 non-approved. They have $6.8 million in other capital levies for a total of $15.3 million, a $1,348 per student capital levies. I just think, again, this district has had a situation where they have invested well over $140 million in capital projects over the last 5 years. It's time for this parcel of land that's being sold to be kept in trust and use the interest for operating rather than for additional capital improvements. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Thank you, Representative Krenke. Representative Newman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Krenke, you've mentioned that the money that would go into trust, the interest only would be used, and I'm looking for that language in the bill, and I'm not seeing it. Am I missing it? The bill talks in terms of the money being permanently transferred, going into trust, but I don't see any limiting language in there about using the principal.
Tricky.
Well, the fact that the money would be put in trust would automatically mean that the principal could not be used.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Newman.
Representative Krenke, I would respectfully disagree. I think that you would have to delineate that, and I understand what you're getting at, but I would really question that, and if that's what you are intending, then that's probably what should be in the bill itself.
Representative Krenke.
Mr. Chairman, I guess we'd have to refer to counsel if the language doesn't cover the fact that the principal couldn't be used for anything other than to be kept in trust. It was my understanding that in current statute, school districts can set up trust, and that's what I assumed that this would do.
Mr. Chair, Representative Newman, I think it would be best to add the language that Representative Newman speaks of. School districts in their accounting refer to something called their trust and agency accounts, and the use of the word trust in that sense does not imply a trust like the permanent school trust fund where the principal is inviolate, but rather the way in which the money is held. So I think it would be best to amend it to say that only the earnings on the proceeds could be spent. Only the earnings on the amount deposited in the trust could be spent.
Mr. Chairman, in my years here, I've learned that counsel is always best listened to when they make suggestions. So I would certainly take their suggestion, and if there's some language that we could amend, be most willing to do that.
Mr. Chair, couldn't we just insert what counsel recommended on line 20?
Yeah,
after the and insert earning of the.
I was going to say,
earnings.
Possibly we could do as Ms. Larson and Mr. Strom are working on that. If there's any other, let's move on with any testimony or any of the questions that we have from members on the spirit of what we're trying to accomplish, and then we can take care of that maybe in a bit.
Mr. Chairman, there are, I believe, a couple of people here from the district that would like to say a few words to the committee.
Okay, we have Mr. Moss and Mr. Witten, is that right? I'm sorry, Ms. Witten. Welcome to the committee.
Dr. Foster.
We are past our time, so you need to get your message, but please be concise.
Thank you. We'll be very short.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Jan Witun, Superintendent of the Mount View School District. We're here today to speak against this bill. This is a very unusual situation, I know. I have with me Dr. Moss, who is our finance person. I'm going to ask him to explain why we are opposed to this bill.
Mr. Moss, welcome.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you very much. John Maas, M-A-A-S for the record. We're opposed to this for a number of reasons. First of all, we began a plan 3 years ago to help the district move along through its bonding process and to cure its indoor air quality problems in its schools. We have 13 buildings. They equal, in square footage, 1.9 IDS centers. We have 10,000 pupils per hour that go through our buildings. Part of this plan and the use of the $6.3 million is for deferred maintenance on roofs, windows, and other places for which we will have to levy taxes against our taxpayers. We have put together a plan using what our previous levy was to keep our taxes absolutely level and to not increase them in order to pay off the debt that Representative Krenke has been talking about. And therefore, we'd submit that to you, and we would ask you to please, after our board's efforts for 3 years to get everything squared away and to plan this over the next few years, to defeat this. Thank you.
Mr. Moss, I don't know who, if you're the one to answer this question. Okay, we sold a building for $6.2 million. Is it my understanding, is that right?
No, we did not sell a building. We sold some land, sir.
Okay. Sold some land. It's my understanding that that would have to go back into the debt redemption fund, if is where it's supposed to go. Is that right?
It would go into either the debt redemption fund or the capital fund if the property had been paid off. This property has been paid off for a number of years, and the land was vacant, and it's being put to use, which will increase the tax base.
Okay, so it is your intention to put this money into the capital?
Into the capital
reserve
account,
capital,
yes.
Account. Okay. Questions from members?
Mr. Chairman, I might just, as I said, I don't want to dwell on the issue of the land, but let me just say that the district acquired this land many years ago. We'll just leave it at that. Many years ago, it would, in my estimation, it would be no different than the district at that time setting aside a savings account or putting money in trust back then. Obviously, the value of the land has grown dramatically. The district came to the conclusion several years ago that they were never going to use the land for a school building or a public purpose, and thus went into the sale and the development of the land. My point is that at this time, the increased value that this project this land purchase has brought to the district should be kept as a trust, should be kept as an asset for the district and not expended on the immediate situation of whether it's building maintenance or deferred maintenance. They've had a 5-year plan in place to do these building improvements. It was not seen at the outset that they were going to have this additional $6 million. So I think, again, I understand the district's position, understand their concerns, but again, this has been land that has appreciated in value over the last 40 years. Let's keep that appreciation and let's use the interest on that trust rather than taking all the money and spending it on our immediate needs.
Thank you. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Krenke, you never cease to amaze me. Coming up with a bill that your entire school board and communities worked on for 3 years and coming to consensus and then to be here with a bill to oppose it as a great local control person and Representative Biskin's on the bill too. It surprises me when he's, I thought, a really good local control person too. So I've just always enjoyed the ironies that we have here at the legislature. But you also have my sympathy because I was on the school board right after we had to close one of the high schools in Roseville. And I know what kind of angst that causes in a community when you're closing a school. You know, it really is kind of closing a part of people's lives. And people get very attached to their schools and the teachers. And I know that the two schools in Moundsview and Representative Meslow and I represent a part of that district too, along with Representative Samuelson. When you pick the school, finally, no matter what the process is, invariably the people in that school and rightly so fight for the lifeblood of what they've worked on, and it's all tied up in their emotions and their kids. So I feel great sympathy for you and Senator Ryder, representing those schools that were picked. I know how hard that is. And so then people come to their legislators and want them to do something about it, and I realize that's what you're doing here. So I sympathize with that. I'm surprised, too, because it seems to me to go against some of your philosophies, but I know that I've read your rationale for that in the paper and that you do have a rationale for that. But I would encourage members to not support this bill for the reasons given. And I just hear a lot about this because I have
the part of Roseville inexplicably is in the Moundsview School District. And so I have one precinct in this district, and I've had quite an onslaught of input from school board members and parent leaders and others, as well as some of the Save Our Schools or whatever the title is from the other side of the group. But I think, rationally speaking, that the legislature should butt out of this local issue.
Mr. Chairman, there are a couple of parents here that they could just have a couple of minutes to give their viewpoints.
Okay, they can come down. In the meantime, Representative Bernard, do you have a question for Representative Krenke?
Oh, no, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to make a comment like Representative Greiling did. I, too, represent the community of Moundsview and the Moundsview School District, and I've had a lot of feedback on this. And the feedback I've had on it is to butt out. And Representative Krenke, I know you're running for Congress, but you might want to consider running for school board, because these are school board decisions. And I must say this, I've been very impressed representing Moundsview for the last 2 years. They have a lot of opportunities for their students. They're very successful in high academic standards, and kids being National Merit Scholar finalists and the sort. And I really believe that this should be left to local control.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I might just respond briefly, the school board didn't have any problem coming here 2 years ago and wanting to impose a additional $10 million levy. I'm sorry, it was a $2 million levy over 10 years, which for their maintenance and operation facility. So it's amazing when the school districts come here and want the legislature to exempt them from getting voter approval. But in a situation like this, when I'm not going to go into what I believe the fiduciary responsibilities or mismanagement of the district have been, but this is a situation that has been in place for a long time, and I think this is just a prudent oversight of the fiduciary responsibility that the district has.
If we could get your testifiers very quickly, if you'd please introduce yourself for the record and be very concise.
I will try to do so. Anna Marie Hingos, H-I-N-G-O-S. I am here as a school volunteer, a taxpayer, a voter, and a mother. And I thank you, Madam Chair and committee members, for allowing us to have a couple of minutes. As you so directly pointed out, this is very much a local control issue, and unique circumstances require unique solutions, and we have unique circumstances in Moundsview. We have an operating deficit. We have some budget issues that need to be addressed, but we also, as you pointed out, have kids that are going to be removed from their schools and put elsewhere to try to address operating dollar problems in our district that probably could be helped by this particular bill. The land sale is unique. It is a $6.3 million windfall to the district. I know Representative Krenke didn't want to go into it, but I will tell you that land was seized by eminent domain to build a school on it, which never was built. So we can all question whether or not we should even be reaping the proceeds of that land. But as it stands, we have, and it was an investment. It should remain an investment. I realize this is not usual protocol, but we have things that need to be addressed that can be helped by this bill. It is the best legislation under the given circumstances, and I believe that it does put local control back where it should be, and that is with us, the taxpayers. We've tried. I respect our board for the work they put in. I really do. But they're in a situation they have to deal with kind of the cards they've been dealt. And we as taxpayers and members of this district feel like we should be able to take the measures we feel are necessary. You folks have the privilege and the opportunity to be of assistance to the community in this sense, and I believe that's why you're all here, why you've all been elected. So I hope that you will look at this the way we do, and that is, in fact, restoring local control to us in a way that we haven't known how to do on our own. And I, for one, would like to never hear the word alternative facilities levy again. And I was embarrassingly uneducated in September,
but I am well educated now. The emotion is long, long since gone about school closing. This is a numbers game, and we need to address it, and I hope you will consider Representative Prinke's legislation.
Thank you, Ms. Ingalls. Could you introduce yourself for the record, please?
Thank you. Hello, my name is Pat O'Connor, O-C-O-N-N-O-R. I am as well a parent and a taxpayer in the Mountview School District. I just want to take a moment and say thank you for allowing us to testify in favor of House File 1462, authored by Representative Prinke. I want to say that I am testifying in support of this bill. It is significant to me and many other parents in our district for several reasons. Representative Prinke gave you the background. In 1999, we had an $80 million bond referendum, voter approved. Unlike communication, a lot of people are not aware about the $52 million that was non-voter approved. $42 million in 2002, that was 20-year bonds that were sold, then $10 million in a levy. When I speak with other parents, they go, are you aware of this history, this background? And people are actually genuinely surprised. It's not well communicated that, yes, $80 million in bond, $99, $52 in 2002 for that alternative facility bonding. And thus, I believe we are at our max. So there's nowhere to go unless you take away our levy cap. So I and many other taxpayers in this district believe that enough money has been levied. It's over 130-odd million bucks in 5 years levied and spent on capital. And after that equation, our school board and administration are also selling other available capital assets. They want to eliminate buildings, and they're interested in another building, which does nothing for our operating crisis. This is my concern. Yes, it's local control, but I have yet to really hear positive in terms of the last 5 years what has been done to address the problem. Flat funding, come to the legislature for more money. Well, we need to address our operating crisis like everybody else in this entire state. So I take the emotion out of the school closing issue. I got almost 100 signatures for Senator Chaudhary in his town hall meeting. I have north of the freeway, south of the freeway, homeschool, public school, private school, parents. It's a taxpayer issue. It is not our school's closing. So thank you very much for this extraordinary opportunity to do this. I've never done this before in my life. But it is a one-time opportunity that we feel that one final major point, local control for the school board. One of the mantras, and I agree, has been they want, quote, long-term stable source of funding. They want long-term revenue streams. If we eliminate all our assets, this is the one asset we do have to use the interest for ongoing operating needs and retain something for my three kids as well as all the other younger ones in the district. If we eliminate these assets, they're gone, spent on capital. So thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Ms. O'Connor. A point well made for your first time testifying. We do have some language, I believe, Ms. Larson, for that amendment. And then we'll have a final comment by Representative Biskins, and then we'll be done.
Mr. Chair, members, to the bill, House File 1462, page 1, line 20, delete proceeds and insert earnings on the amount deposited in the trust fund.
One more time, Ms. Larson.
Page 1, line 20, delete proceeds and insert earnings on the amount deposited in the trust fund.
Okay, members, I will move that amendment. Any comments? All in favor of the amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment's adopted. Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Very quickly, to Representative Greiling's point, and Representative Greiling, you've been around here enough to know that not everything is black and white. Even I sometimes see shades of gray, and sometimes sometimes issues, force people to weigh competing priorities. And I will say that while a number of people have said this isn't about school closings, my signature on this piece of legislation is exactly about school closings and my priority to start thinking about things differently, to look at the research when it comes to small schools, to look at the research when it comes to community schools, overwhelmed my inherent leanings towards local control on this issue. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Biskins. Any other comments?
Right here.
Representative Graham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Biskins and Representative Krinke, to have a lot of small schools costs more money, so I'm going to take great hope from the two of you that maybe there's light outside the tunnel for great things for school funding in this biennium.
Okay, seeing no other comments, Representative Krinke, final 5-second comment?
Just thank you, members, and would appreciate your consideration of the legislation. Thank you very much.
Okay, Representative Krinke. House File 1467 will be laid over for possible inclusion in the K-12 omnibus bill. Representative Meslow, do you move the minutes? Did I see you say that?
I do, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Minutes are approved. Anything else? With that, this meeting is adjourned.